Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So if Pangea broke apart in like one movement, just boom.
Jim, I wonder if anybody noticed.
Hey, I'm ready. Right foot back.
Begins with a U. It ends with an A. Has a meal in your shoulder.
Welcome, everyone, to the Cultaholic Classic Raw Review as the other Cultaholic lads feel the fallout from the biggest pregnancy announcement since the last one. We are here via our IcaPro-powered DeLorean back in a year where indeed WWF is expecting a massive downturn in business, expecting a long drought of any true wrestling talent, and expecting smaller and smaller crowds to the point where performing in an empty performance centre might be an option. And who be we? I be Fake Geordie, radio presenter without portfolio Tom Campbell. I am with the bear in the big blue bar cage, the head pen of Cultaholic. When he was told that he was in the family way, he was begifted a pen. A pencil as a baby shower gift. And he turned and said two things, Valerie. One, not even pregnant. How dare you? And two, don't even need a pencil. I need a pen because I get it right every time. He is Justin Henry and he is going to be a mother.
What the hell would your intro have been before the Becky Lynch announcement?
Mate, I'd have struggled this week. Thank God Becky Lynch is in the family way.
See? Why's the other Cultaholic lads are stuck in the elevator for a half hour with Asuka?
I am here! Apparently in Germany!
Yes, mein Fraulein Tom.
Mate, I'm proud to be your Fraulein. How are you doing, mate?
As good as I can be. How about yourself?
Oh, that's considering the circumstances. You know what? We're doing all right. We're doing all right. I'm waiting for my fiber broadband to be switched on. That is the true highlight in the Campbell Cottage at the moment. Fiber broadband is coming. I'm so excited.
Why don't you take your victories where you can get them at this point?
Oh, mate, and it is a massive victory. We are not alone this week, you and I. We have somebody else joining our family. For the second time this week, we can reveal that a wrestling family is going from two to three. See what I did there?
Yes, we are conducting a seance to contact whoever the hell put this show together. Because we assume that they are so gray and dead inside that they are no longer of this mortal coil. Well, no, actually, we are joined by our very good friend, one of the, I should say, the premier Cultaholic Discord mod, my good friend and yours, Miss Sydney Zumowitz.
Hello.
Hello. You're right.
I don't know how much I agree with that, Justin, but I appreciate it.
It's a promotion. Take it.
No, to be fair, of all the mods on the Cultaholic Discord, Sydney, you are indeed one of them.
Yes, I am. I am one of them.
She is the Sydneyest.
She is the
I'm very. I'm the very Sydneyest.
The most Sydneyest of all the Midneyest. Are you enjoying your time in lockdown? I understand you just bought a Switch.
I have had the Switch for quite a while now. Not just bought. When lockdown started, I just bought Animal Crossing. So that's what I've been playing a lot of. But I've been managing. I've had bad days. I've had good days. It's been very iffy. I've had med days. But I mean, more than anything, I just miss my friends up at college. That's about it.
It's a weird old time, isn't it?
Yeah.
Your kids and your Animal Crossing, I swear.
Exactly. Here's the thing, right? Animal Crossing is out and everyone's going crazy about Animal Crossing. Justin, mate, I'm more excited about Total Extreme Warfare that comes out today.
Oh, that's right. Well, I'm sure many of you are excited about that. I stick with the old Extreme Warfare because I can't stand a game that doesn't have regular dates on it. Like, Monday, first week. Wednesday, second week. It's like there's 28-day months, and that, being very anal retentive like I am, that drives me insane.
Well, they might have fixed it in this new one. You don't know.
Well, you have to let me know then, because if they do, I will drop whatever amount of money on it and play the hell out of it until it's time to go.
I can guarantee that we will all know at the same time, right? Because, just letting you know, I'm planning to do some live streams on the Cultaholic Twitch playing TEW 2020.
Exciting!
Well, that gives me an idea. Okay, you be Hunter, you build everyone up, and I'll call in as Vince. And I'll tell you who to bury and who to push.
In fact, I am considering doing something whereby we get people on from Cultaholic, and I've built my roster all nice, and they come on and they book a show. So, and I can't have any say in how a show is booked. You just book it the way you want it, and if it means all my carefully built cards come crashing down, then so be it. I think there's some fun to be had in that. And
how about we do circular booking, where you pass off you have like six to eight people, and then one guy books a show, you pass it off to the next guy who books a show. So it comes back around to the first guy. Why are we doing a Who Ran Over Doink angle?
Oh, good. My idea stuck. That's fine. For those who aren't aware of what we're talking about, TEW, Total Extreme Warfare, is essentially the football manager of professional wrestling booking. So it's essentially going to be a live stream of admin. And I'm excited because I think I'm looking for stuff that helps me decompress at the end of a day. And I feel like just dicking about on TEW with good company, I think will help me decompress. So come and join us for some admin.
Yes, come watch me play a game where that has no animation, where I just book wrestling matches.
Yep, exactly. You know what you're getting. If you come along and you have a bad time, that's on you.
Well, it's the same as watching Raw today, where you're just watching somebody, you know, book a show into oblivion on his own whims.
But anyway, enough about our flights of fancy of booking. We're here to look at somebody else's flights of fancy of booking back in 1994. Myself and Justin Henry, for the last 70 plus weeks, have been watching every episode of Monday Night Raw from the very beginning until the bitter end or my inevitable death this year. And Justin, where and when are we for this week's episode?
Well, it is a live show, finally. This aired on Monday, September 26, 1994. Live from the Utica Memorial Auditorium in Utica, New York. And I picked this show. Well, I knew we were going to have Sid on the show eventually again, very soon. But I wanted to wait till we had a live show, because I'm thinking, well, a live show to be fresh. They'll have, you know, they'll have, be full of piss and vinegar, and they'll put forth a good effort. Ooh, I was sorely mistaken.
This truly doesn't feel like a live show full of piss and vinegar. Maybe piss.
I didn't even know it was live, so I thought it was taped.
Now, by not knowing it was live, you could have said, I thought it was dead, and I would have said, you were absolutely right.
I didn't even know it was sick. But anyway, before we get into the rigors of this week's episode of Monday Night Raw, just a little bit of around the houses for the wrestling news for this week. Justin, Ric Flair is retiring. I know! What a sad end. WCW management have apparently decided to retire Ric Flair after the upcoming Halloween Havoc show. The decision was made to add a career versus career stipulation to Hulk Hogan versus Ric Flair. Two reasons why. Number one, with Ric Flair as Booker, WCW felt as long as Ric Flair was an active wrestler, he would never move himself down the card. And two, Flair's presence stands in the way of Hogan being universally accepted as a babyface, particularly in the old Mid-Atlantic territory after the reaction in Roanoke, where Hogan appeared on the screen and was booed out of the building to the point the promotion had to turn off the crowd noise.
Well, that's the risk of bringing Hogan into a company that's predominantly been conditioned to, or actually where its fans are conditioned to, you know, not like him because he represents the other guys.
I love how the fact that Hogan isn't getting over as the face they want them to is Ric Flair's fault.
Here's a question, though. If that were to happen today, if Roman Reigns were to go to AEW at any point, how would the fans receive him there?
Ooh, Sid, as a resident AEW superfan, what is your the temperature gauge when it comes to Roman Reigns in AEW?
I feel like if he just would go and be like the same person, probably wouldn't be accepted. And I'm pretty sure majority of people, whether or not he changed, he like was himself or continued his like Vince McMahon persona or whatever, or persona that Vince gave him, then I feel like people would still be like, well, he's the WWE guy. So I feel like it would be similar to AJ, because AJ was the TNA guy until he came to WWE and won the WWE championship and became one of the top guys. And I feel like if they kept him the same way, where he's the big dog, all that stuff, he probably wouldn't be accepted. But if he had a full-on switch around like Moxley did, with like a whole new name, whole new persona, whole new I don't give a crap attitude, then maybe he'd be accepted. But even then, I don't know if he'd be accepted, because he's Mr. WWE right now. So,
oh, I'd be all in on the large canine Joanna White showing up at Daly's place.
I think that would be a lovely time to be had by all involved. Hey, I liked it. I liked it. It got over with me. I want them to, and I want him to have a big dog in AEW when that eventually happens. Hey, interestingly, it was a big week for another big star in professional wrestling. We go to the other side of the world, where Jushin Liger has suffered a badly broken leg. Liger was teaming with Riki Choshu against Keiji Muto and Wild Pegasus. Freak accident as Liger whipped Muto into the ropes, leapfrogged him. Muto rolled under and came back with a savat kick, but the Liger's leg gave out on the landing. Couldn't get up, and he rolled out of the ring from the kick. Do you remember this, Justin?
He was out for a while after that, and as a result, like, his super long junior heavyweight title reign had to come to an end. I can't remember who filled the vacancy, but I knew Liger was Dunsky long term, almost a year, I think. And it kind of gives me pause, because I just realized Benoit was present for both Liger's major injury and Sabu's major injury in just a few months stretch there. All this Sabu's he had a bigger part in.
Gosh, it's true, isn't it?
Yeah, because that's how he earned the Crippler nickname, was the Sabu incident.
Oh, jeebus. If you want answering the question as to what became of the junior heavyweight title. So you're right, he was indeed out of action. At this point in time, it was believed that Liger would be out for 6 months to a year, which is a massive blow to New Japan. They announced on the 27th, so the day after this episode of Raw, in Osaka, that Liger's junior heavyweight title would be put at stake in a six-man one-night tournament, which was won by Nori Hanaga. But it was a bit of a star-studded tournament. So you had Hanaga, Hamada, Otani, Pegasus, El Samurai, and Black Tiger. Hanaga seems to be the lesser of the stars amongst that. It's eerily similar, and I mean this with nothing but love, eerily similar to Otis winning Money in the Bank.
You're comparing Norio Hanaga to Otis.
Damn right I am.
So is Pegasus, I almost said something innocently without realizing the implications, and now I'm not going to say. I was going to say, would I make Pegasus Corbin? And I realized Corbin threw two guys off a building. And I'm like, well, maybe I shouldn't say that.
I like that it crossed your mind, though.
Yeah, it's I got very conscious there for a moment. Pegasus is Benoit Sid.
Okay.
We have to explain some old New Japan stuff here. Black Tiger, I believe, was Eddie Guerrero, was it not?
Yep. And then I know Lionheart was Jericho. Yeah,
and also Super Liger, but we don't discuss Super Liger.
So it was a bit star-studded, wasn't it? And so it was a surprise to see who actually won it when you consider the players involved there. The GWF has officially shut.
No!
I know. They were evicted out of the Dallas Sportatorium for being nearly 4 months behind in paying rent.
Not Diet World Class.
Oh, Diet World Class is gone. Press F in the chat for Diet World Class. But it's all right, because from the ashes comes a phoenix. We had a Herb Abrams show this week.
Yes, we did.
Now, Sid, fact, you and your age group, you and your ilk, as
well.
I watched Dark Side of the Ring with Justin.
Oh, fair enough. But you are now aware of the legend, the enigma that is Herb Abrams, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
The walking riddle box that is Herb Abrams.
So let me just make sure I've got this right. He died covered in Vaseline on a coke trip surrounded by prostitutes.
Yes.
Well,
what a guy.
While chasing the prostitutes with a baseball bat.
Of course. Oh, sorry. How did I forget the baseball bat caveat? what an individual. Anyway, Herb Abrams.
My aunt went the same way.
Do you know what? We all want to go that way. Herb Abrams put on a show this week in Las Vegas on the 23rd of September.
He sure did.
My God. Herb Abrams. This show. You're familiar with this show, aren't you, Justin?
As a matter of fact, I watched it earlier on Sunday.
Oh!
On YouTube.
Do you want to talk us through it, or shall I go and run down the card and you can just chime in?
If you want to, but I will say I was very happy that the person who uploaded the YouTube was from the Philadelphia area, because we got a bunch of ads for Sports Channel in Philadelphia, and I was feeling all nostalgic.
Oh, nice. Thank you to whoever did that. You are the kindest of souls. So this show, by the way, was supposed to feature Bruno Sammartino, but couldn't make it because he was being honored by the Italian-American Society of Pittsburgh, California. Apparently.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Oh, Pennsylvania, sorry. My apologies.
Which, by the way, that is kayfabe, by the way. See, the actual reason is that Bruno Sammartino wanted nothing more to do with this asshole.
So that's just it. He just went, nah, mate, you're fine. Jim Duggan and Hercules Hernandez were meant to be there, but they weren't because of reasons. The show itself, well, okay. Dan Spivey beats Johnny Ace for the America's title.
So in other words, Waylon Mercy beat the guy who beat John Cena in the main event of Over the Limit 2012.
You and Over the Limit. Jack Armstrong beat Mondo Guerrero for the junior heavyweight title.
Fun fact about that match. If Brian Zane pointed this out in his Wrestling with Regret review of UWF in general, Mondo Guerrero, they gave him the theme song Taco Grande by Weird Al. I swear to God.
Sunny Beach. I don't remember Sunny Beach.
But he was on Dark Side of the Ring as one of the talking heads.
Amazing. So I've not seen that Herb Abrams one yet, so I'm cool with that. Sunny Beach beat Dr. Feelgood, Al Burke, for the TV title.
Dr. Feelgood was about 6'7" and looked like a just your typical roughneck heel. So I don't know why he's being named for a Motley Crue song.
Have you noticed they're all title matches at the moment?
Yeah, there's a lot of belts on the show. A lot of belts.
Bob Orton and Finnish Hellraiser Thor. It was our boy Ludwig Borger. Getting
involved.
Went to a double DQ Orton bleeding in this match as well. It was quite the sight.
Wait, Bob Orton bled in the match?
Yep.
Oh dear lord.
Hmm.
Let's not talk about that.
Candy Devine beat Tina Moretti, former Glow Girl and future Ivory, in the worst match of the night.
Ivory was the only person who actually seemed happy to be there.
Brian Blair and Jumpin' Jim Brunzel defeated The Warlord and Power Warrior.
Gee, why wasn't Barbarian there? Oh, wait, I think I might have an idea.
Oh, yes. That ties in nicely. More on that later. They were called the Powers of Pain.
Brian Blair actually had the best epitaph for Herb Abrams on that Dark Side of the Ring.
Reminder.
Which was, he died doing what he loved. Cocaine and hookers. said deadpan with the utmost seriousness.
I mean, he's not wrong.
He's right, really.
He's not wrong. Cactus Jack and Jimmy Snooker went to a double count out in a lumberjack match.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite finishes ever because, as fully described in his book, he was supposed to go over Snooker, but he didn't feel right going over his idol. So he improvised a double count out finish. And as we're crawling into the crowd of about 400 people in the 17,000 seat arena, Brian Blair yells at him, "What are you doing?" Because we're doing a double count out. Blair says, Blair's like laughing at him. He goes, like, "In a lumberjack match?" And his cactus snuck into the void. Cactus yells, "It's Herb's show. We can do anything." It was a nice tour of all the empty seats, by the way, if you ever get a chance to look at it.
Oh, I will. And in the main event, Steve Williams beat Sid Vicious via DQ. The ref actually counted three, but the interference was late. They pretended the interference cost him the match anyway. Just a hot mess of a show.
You actually skipped three matches in the middle. I'm guessing Dave must not have known about them.
Oh.
One of them was Wild Thing Steve Ray. Not Stevie Ray, but Steve Ray. Losing to Tyler Mayne, who is a former star from WCW known as Big Sky, and the future Michael Myers in the Rob Zombie Halloween movies.
Oh.
And also Sabretooth in the X-Men movies.
Nice. Good shout.
So, second biggest star on the show behind Foley.
Dave didn't see that one, nor did many others. The show was a disaster. Drawing. Okay. Actually, you know what? Let's get some over-unders. Because Justin, I know you've seen it. Sid, I know you haven't. But just for fun, 17,000-seat arena. How many people paid for tickets? Nearest answer wins. Sid.
Oh, my goodness. They mentioned it on the thing, but I cannot remember for the life of me. I think it was like... Oh, wasn't it like... 900 or something like that?
400, I'll say.
It was 600 total, 228 paid.
Holy crap.
I've been to CZW shows that have had more paid.
I've been to Starbucks with more people in.
Well, that's a fire hazard. You don't want to do that.
Not anymore, obviously, because of social distancing. But
right.
The sad thing about this show is that... Well, there's a lot to be sad about. But it wasn't without its publicity. Like, because Steve Williams was on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. Publicizing this. Yeah, the UWF.
He was?
Yeah. According to Dave, Steve Williams was on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno.
I refuse to believe this.
This is what Dave says.
Well, I got to say, if you owe it to yourself to watch The Dark Side of the Ring because it is alternately... horrifying and hilarious at the same time, and for the most part it's just galling. It's absolutely galling. And Herb's performance on this show, now I don't want to cast aspersions on the man, but this man was clearly coked up throughout the entire night.
You forgot to mention your other favorite line from the documentary.
Which one was that? Oh, wait,
are you kidding me?
Oh, was this the one where he yelled at the crowd?
Yes.
Okay. Now this part was not on the YouTube version of the show, so this must have been off camera, and I was very saddened by it. But according to the company's GM on Dark Side of the Ring, Herb had the microphone and was just yelling stuff at the crowd before the show. And at one point, he yells, "Let's hear it for the Jews!"
Why?
I have never heard Justin laugh so much.
I mean, come on. Even Vince couldn't come up with something you know that off the cuff and silly.
I don't understand.
I mean, the Jewish people are good people, a fine people. And they deserve much praise, but come on now. He's yelling at a wrestling show in front of 600 people.
Was there any context to it? Or was it just like, I just thought, like, in the same way they go, all the men give me a cheer, all the women give me a cheer, all the Jews give me a cheer.
I think he was just completely out of it, because he would do post-match interviews with Blackjack Mulligan next to him for some reason, who added nothing to the show the entire night. He was just standing there in his cowboy hat and like a vest, and it's like, okay. And he's just like, what do you think? What are you gonna do now, you cheater, Dad Spivey? And just he's completely out of it. It's amazing.
Jeez, oh man.
I'm amazed his heart didn't explode on camera.
That is something else. So that gives us a little tour around the houses of this particular time period in 1994. Let's go to Justin Henry now. Myself and Sydney will chuckle and guffaw our way through this week's episode of Monday Night Raw.
Chuckle and guffaw.
I will say Blackjack Raw was much more interesting than this show.
We should have just watched that, shouldn't we?
At least that had stuff to make fun of. This show was just... it was bleh. Although I do appreciate I appreciate the fact that the still photo for the show was Undertaker making Cornette face.
It was, wasn't it? I nearly...
while bathed in purple light.
I nearly used that as the graphic for the thumbnail for the podcast. But then something else happened later on and I went, nah, it has to be that.
It was like the mold for a WWF blow-up doll or something. It was really unsettling looking.
Very unsettling, mate.
And he was so monotone.
Well, that's Taker. He wasn't human yet. He was still zombie mortician Undertaker. But we're getting there. Mm. So tonight it's the Tatanka versus Razor for the Intercontinental title, which is interesting because Tommy, you'll recall on last week's show when they were hyping up this week's show with the dun 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 dun, you know, little insert. Mm-hmm. He said Tatanka would be in action, which made it sound like he was going to have a jobber match against some local yokel. Instead, he's facing Razor for the Intercontinental belt, which they did not advertise. At this point, we are truly in the midst of the booking on a cocktail napkin portion of wrestling. With Tatanka versus Razor Ramon, all of a sudden now an Intercontinental title match, because this show did not have a hook to it. Now it almost does.
But this is like an old... this is something that WWE have a habit of doing even to this day, where you will get on the day of a show going, oh, by the way, title's on the line.
That was like Hell in a Cell last year when we knew two matches going into the show, and all of a sudden, hey, AJ Styles, new man, six-man tag, how about that? And
oh, yeah.
It's like 5 o'clock Sunday.
Jeez, that was terrible. That was bad times. Halcyon days compared to what we have now.
No. Well, yes. There was crowds and stuff there. I mean, they were angry crowds, but they were crowds.
Mm-hmm.
So we go to the intro of Vincent Savage ringside. In a direct parallel to wrestling today, Vince gestures to the Spanish announcers, and instead of showing what he's talking about, Kevin Dunn pans the crowd for crowd shots. Apparently this has been an issue for 25 years.
It really has.
And Kevin Dunn is not good at TV.
Bless him.
Savage makes a few OJ trial references just to really date this one, because that was just getting underway.
I like it when he drops something like that in, which, as you say, just perfectly time stamps this one. Incidentally, we won't be seeing Jim Ross on WWE for a little while, as he's officially replaced Bob Caudle in Smoky Mountain Wrestling.
Yes, he'll be down there for a little bit before he's called back to work in the office in WWF and migrates back to TV again. In fact, him and Michael Hayes were the last commentators ever on Wrestling Challenge, which which ends about a year from now on here.
Oh.
So,
I'm over here just pressing F for Wrestling Challenge. Hang on. There we go.
You've never even seen Wrestling Challenge.
Oh, how dare you, sir! I grew up on Wrestling Challenge. How dare you, sir?
Okay, name three things that happened on Wrestling Challenge.
Wrestling. And that's challenges.
There were occasional challenges.
Sometimes there was a chat show.
Which one?
Wrestling Challenge. The Barbershop.
Yeah, you tried.
Barbershop.
That is correct.
Give him a little kick through the thing.
That did happen when Sean kicked Marty and then threw him through the window. No, I'm sorry. Marty tried to dive through the window to escape. Coward.
Rick Martel.
Did a
blind of a Jake man. Robert.
Anyway, it's super...
Blinded Robert.
Are you on Wikipedia?
No. I'm listening off the top of my head. Blinded a Robert. With the old spray. And
did you see it? Did you say he blinded a Robert?
Blinded a Robert with the old smelly spray.
He blinded Jake. He blinded Jake Roberts, not a...
Blinded
Jake,
a Robert.
Jake broke into his house.
and on Wrestling Challenge. John? Oh, yeah, come on. Headline. Go for
John,
it.
John, could you do your depiction of Jake Roberts breaking Rick Martel's house and Martel blinding him with mace? Thanks.
Also,
anyway, go on.
Also, shush, also, Hulk and Randy had a sad time.
Who the hell's Hulkin?
Hulk and Randy.
Hulk. Is it like half Hulk, half Vulcan?
Vulcan Randy. Vulcan Randy live had long a bad time.
Live long and prosper, brother.
His wife was upset. She had a little cry, and he was like, "Oh, don't cry." And he was like, "Oh, get her off her. Let's have a match." That happened. Snake burgers.
Okay, I'm going to quiz you now. Who is the wrestler whose neck the berserker accidentally broke with a stuffed pile driver on challenge?
The neck there. It was John Robert Thompson Smith Jones.
Trick question. That never happened. Anyway,
I was going to say the Yeti.
Yeti didn't happen. God, Sydney. Yeti didn't happen on challenge. God. Even I know that. See, Vulcan Hogan had a cry over a woman.
If Berserker and Yeti had a match on challenge, then would have canceled the show.
Zeus.
So.
Zeus.
Razor Ramon versus Tatanka. We're past that now.
Ted DiBiase kicked a boy.
Tom's not past it yet.
Tom.
Ted DiBiase kicked a boy.
Tom. He kicked the basketball. He didn't kick the boy.
Kicked a boy in the head. Virgil
yes,
said.
He hit a buzz.
Virgil said. Virgil said, "Stop it, Ted. Let me have your belt."
Was there a basketball match on it? Like how Raw was? Yeah. Like what?
Profits won.
No. This is, it was a famous bit where Ted DiBiase said he would give someone in the crowd like $300 if they could dribble a basketball 15 times. So he brought this little kid up. Kid is obviously a plant in real life. It's like a little 7-year-old kid. Shut up, Tom. The kid dribbles, and DiBiase counts one. So he gets like 14, and DiBiase kicks it away from him after the 14th one. Says, "Oh, you don't get the money then."
Wow. And
total dick move. It was hilarious.
I'm glad you laughed at it.
It was funny.
That kid was probably traumatized.
No, he was a plant who knew ahead of time.
Just
and in
because
fact,
he was a plant doesn't mean that he would be like, he's going to kick it right at 14.
Years later, that kid was working at a car rental center and met DiBiase again and told him, "I was the kid from that segment," and they got a photo together.
Oh.
It's pretty cool, actually.
I love stuff like
things
that.
End up good.
You know what's not cool? This match.
Yes.
Razor Ramon versus Tatanka for the Intercontinental title in what was basically a house show match with a camera on it.
Basically.
I think when Tatanka turned heel, he vowed to never have an interesting match ever again.
He really did. It was this. Now, from the very off, they missed a great trick with Tatanka, because he had the same music, same hook, but just walked slowly and surly. The trick is, when you turn someone heel and they've got upbeat music, you either change the music or you slow the music down.
Mm-hmm.
This music slowed down would have been ace.
Now, eventually, they will change the music to... it starts out with the war cry, but then it goes into DiBiase's theme. But they didn't do that yet. It's still the upbeat sort of... I can't call it like a war dance song, because it's just like upbeat rock music with... Like hard drum beats. But it's he's wearing darker tights now. So he's a heel, but we haven't really changed his aesthetic much.
What I do like is how, by having this match, regardless of a lack of promotion for it, it suggests in storyline world that if you align yourself with Ted DiBiase, it pays dividends. Because now you're fighting for the belt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's although this match is basically going to be a wash, they are trying to get over the fact that DiBiase is your golden ticket for bigger days. Although, spoiler alert, I don't think anybody in this group ever won a belt under the tutelage of Ted DiBiase.
Really?
Well, other than Austin bringing back the $1 million belt, no.
I assumed at least somebody had won one.
Nope.
Oh, that's a shame for everybody involved.
This is the worst stable ever, not counting the resurrection of the First Family in 1999 WCW.
It really is a stable of, like, misfit toys, as we will learn. Like, Ted DiBiase, he's the $1 million man. He could have bought so many people, and he just bought, like, the dregs of the wrestling industry.
Well, he had to be cheap.
is that the payoff for this? He's just a cheapskate.
He's got to keep all his own money. He's got to keep all his own money, so he's like, okay, I got to buy the people that cost the less. Okay, we'll get this guy, and look, I still have millions of dollars.
She wasn't even alive at this point yet. She understands the angle.
John, can you do Ted DiBiase coming out of Poundland? Or a dollar store for our American friends, either or.
Oh, okay, I was so confused.
Sorry, Poundland is basically the dollar store in the UK.
Okay, I was thinking something way different.
Oh, whoa! What?
Well, he comes out of there too, because that's where all his money went.
Phil.
That's why he's forcing retirement early.
Sydney.
Anyway.
I'm sorry.
Shocking behavior.
So Razor's pyro botches, which is a good sign for how the show is going to go. Half of the ground level lawn sprinkler pyro doesn't go off.
Half-hearted and half-witted.
Yeah, it's like the Orange Cassidy of pyro. He should have like sparklers when he comes out, Orange Cassidy.
Oh, or little spooters, little non-fireworks.
Yeah, like a little like Roman candle or something.
Yes. I can't
wait.
Well,
they did the little steam.
Do they?
Yeah.
See, I'm so sad. I don't get to watch as much AEW as I'd like to. And I miss a lot of Orange Cassidy stuff.
I think it was All Out. I can't remember. I know it was a show I was at where they had him come out. He put up the thumbs. And then there was just a little smoke. That was
Revolution,
about it.
I think.
Oh, yeah. It was Revolution. My bad. Yeah. But because he was facing Pac, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So... they had him come out and he did the little thumbs up thing and the best friends were right behind him. And then it was just like, poof, like tiny little smoke instead of like huge fireworks. And I think they did like one little spark or something, or like a small flame, but that was about it.
See? So, this match.
Well, on the plus side, Tatanka does wrestle like a heel. Like a very boring heel, but a heel nonetheless.
The match started out fine with some hard strikes. Razor gets a legitimate hip toss, meaning he puts his hip into the guy's abdomen and uses that as the fulcrum for which to flip him over, rather than just, here, I hook your arm, now you do the flip. So afterwards, Rachel starts working the arm and And this goes on for about 3 minutes. This really is a house show match. As in, we're not really going full gore here. We get a sequence of Rachel tries to win via countout several times by knocking the Tonga to the floor and keeping him from re-entering, which is my old strategy on Tecmo World Wrestling, in order to win matches quickly. Tatanka takes over with a series of slams. We're informed that money can't buy championships in this company, even though DiBiase bought the 24/7 title 25 years later from Medusa.
And he nearly bought the WWE title on Wrestling Challenge.
That was the main event.
It was the main event of Wrestling Challenge.
Well, you knock it off. But the point is, Tatanka hooks an abdominal stretch, because apparently IRS is a training partner now, both being in the corporation. I actually wrote this match is slow so I wouldn't forget.
It does feel like Tatanka's been to a training lesson with the Million Dollar Corporation, where they've gone, all right, now you're one of us, here's how you wrestle. Okay, slowly. And when you get near a rope, do an abdominal stretch and grab the rope. That is the rule. That is the hard and fast rule. As a conglomerate, as a corporation, we need to make sure that everything feels the same all down the board. So therefore, if we could all do this abdominal stretch by holding the ropes, that'd be grand.
Yes, they're all the blanks from World's End. And Razor is Gary King. So, Razor reverses into his own abdominal stretch because that's our hope spot, apparently. DiBiase gets involved, Razor goes after him, Tatanka sneaks up on him at ringside. Then Luger runs out in a modified hospital gown.
Why, yeah, what was he wearing here? What was this?
I just said
about
a modified hospital gown.
It did look like. Just listlessly wandering out 400 hours into this match.
He runs. I don't know what you how you would describe this shirt other than what I just described it as. So Luger runs out, Bigelow jumps him. The first thing I thought of, remember when Luger tried to save Tatanka from Yokozuna like a year before this, and the Quebecers jumped him in the aisle immediately, but like why he was making the save? Mm. Luger can't make saves. Someone always attacks him. It's like groundskeeper Willie in that one Treehouse of Horror. I'm coming to save you, boy, and someone hits him in the back with an axe.
That's basically
I'm coming
what
to save you. Yes, groundskeeper Luger.
John.
Hey, John.
That's an easy one. But don't be reading my thoughts between 4 and 5, because that's Luger's time.
Grease me up.
There's nary an animal alive that's willing to sell for a greased up Luger.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
So, now I want Luger teaching French. Bonjour. Anyway, before I go off on a groundskeeper Luger tangent. So Bigelow jumps Luger because Luger's useless. There's a big brawl in the aisle. Tatanka forgets he's in the title match. Runs up to beat up Luger because Luger's so beat upable. Razor beats the count back in and wins. Razor rather win the match first before going to save Luger because the hell with Luger. That was your match. That was over 10 minutes of that, what we just described.
Was it? It felt like longer. It felt like about 16 minutes, if maybe 26 minutes.
Yes, it was not good.
Wait, so he won by count out, not Tatanka got disqualified? Because I thought he got disqualified, and I was really confused by that.
Well, it's funny you note that, Sid, because we come back from commercial break, and we have a two-shot of Vince and Savage at the table, and Vince has to tell us what the finish was because it was so ambiguous on TV.
Oh.
You might not have heard, you might have tuned out when Vince came on, which I can't blame you for that, because Vince is usually talking about, Luger's muscles or something, or
talking about Savage going to be the quarterback on the Cardinals. I'm never getting over that.
Oh, we're getting to that part. That bizarre tangent. Okay, but so Vince has to come on and tell us what happened, even though we just saw it, because it may not have been clear enough. We're off to a rip-roaring start on this show. We go from bluster to eeriness, because we're plugging the heart attack tour, and Vince asked Savage, when was the last time you had his heart checked? Which is, yeah, I made that sound when at that point I went, because in 17 years it doesn't end well for Macho.
Yikes.
Yeah. So now we have Bearer plugging the heart attack tour, which is almost as ironic, or eerily coincidental, I should say.
Jeez.
He's in the...
Can people who had heart attacks and such stop plugging the heart attack tour?
Exactly. Like, call it something else. Call it the massive coronary tour. We don't do that.
Can you call it the getting thrown off the roof of WWE HQ tour?
Let's see. What does
My
no one
boy.
Die of anymore? Let's have the tuberculosis tour. It's the whooping cough tour.
It's no the coronavirus. Ah, it's too soon.
My boy. He has been treated awfully.
Wait, who's been treated awfully?
My boy. You know who I'm talking about.
What are you talking about?
Talking about Mysterio. First he was thrown off, almost killed, and then he was almost killed by Steph by gouging his eyes out. I'm like, what?
When you were saying my boy, you sounded like Robert Pattinson's dad in Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. My boy! My boy!
I'm just sad. They treat him so poorly.
Well, he also got choked out by Shayna.
Oh, yeah, well, even better.
He had a rough week, apparently, right?
He's off to AEW soon anyway, it's fine.
Just one time, I was wishing when he feuded with Eddie Guerrero that when Eddie would make his entrance first and drive the car out, and he would park it over Ray's trap door so that Ray would try to do the entrance and hit his head on the underside of the car.
Why are you so mean?
Because that would have been the funniest thing ever. And Eddie gives his sly smile to the camera, like that little "did I do that" look on his face.
Who's that?
Puts his finger on his lips. Put his fingers under his lips. Oops.
best rib ever. So
he seriously hurts.
Well, yeah, I mean, sometimes someone has to get hurt for the sake of a rib. You gotta understand.
I don't know WWE ribs as well.
So Mr. Fuji's done much worse. Anyway, Bear's plugging the heart attack tour. He's in a boiler room with Undertaker. Apparently they're in Mankind's den, even though Mankind's not here yet. He was just working Blackjack Brawl with Snuka.
It's a Herb Abrams talks about show. We can do what we want.
It's our boiler room. Herb got it for us. Herb's over in the corner, covered in baby oil.
Where's anyway. My paycheck?
Well, I dropped it to the floor, and all of a sudden it bounced up, hit the ceiling. Boing, 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 boing.
Makes that noise when you go to the bank.
So Taker says Yokozuna's name. Yokozuna. He says it like that, which is kind of funny because it's Taker saying it. He says he's going to search for Yoko's soul.
Are we going to get Leslie Nielsen back in for this?
God, I hope not. Because apparently, Taker can't just say, I'm going to beat your fat ass. Because you can't talk about violence on the show anymore. So now he's going to search for his soul, which is slang for, I'm going to beat your fat ass.
It's also spooky.
It is also spooky.
Yes, it is mystical. And then Paul Bearer, in the one great moment from this show, points at the casket in front of him and shakes like he's a friggin' Family Guy monkey. He lives in Chris's closet. He's just doing the finger point with his teeth gnashing.
I love that. Very animated Paul Bearer.
Paul Bearer's always animated. He's a pro. So it's during this match that Sid completely lost faith in this show.
Oh, yeah.
Quang versus our old friend Ramblin' Rich Myers. Myers' mullet game is on point, as always. He gets a great head scissors in this match, Myers. Where he's suspended for a long time. Legs around poor Savio's head, using his hands to kind of hoist him, kind of balance himself, and all of a sudden he just spins Quang over into the head scissors. Got a pretty good pop for it, too. He floated on that move. And then, for some reason, Vince McMahon decides to make a bad NFL trade joke, in which Randy Savage ends up as the quarterback for the Arizona Cardinals. Phil Simms joins commentary on Monday Night Raw as a former Giants quarterback turned announcer. And ESPN gets the Bushwhackers. Now, I'm sure when this was first floated as an idea for what to say on the show, it sounded semi-amusing. Possibly. Possibly not. All I know is it was not funny in execution.
I honestly didn't think it was a joke. I thought they were saying, oh yeah, they're going to be on ESPN or something. That's what I thought, and that was why I was so confused. And then when it was like, oh, it was actually a joke, I was like, well, it wasn't funny.
Well, Sid, you see, on the very first episode of this show, as Tom might remember, at the very end of the show, Vince promoted on next week's Raw that we're going to see Woody Allen wrestle his wife, soon-to-be ex-wife Mia Farrow, in a steel cage match, and he had a graphic up for it. Because they're desperate for media attention. And they cling to pop culture like a friggin' octopus.
That's still the case.
Well, yes, that's always been their MO.
And all I can think is
if Savage could be the quarterback for the Cardinals, he'd probably just sit on the bench all season instead of being in the game, which is would parallel this.
Yeah.
Myers misses a springboard dive. Quang finishes with a great spinning heel kick. And that's your match.
Simple, simple, simple. Nice to see Rich Myers getting a little lick in, as we've said. But they seem to like Quang at the moment. Because this is... They're using him quite a bit. Like, he lost to The Undertaker. And they've almost immediately put him back on Raw and given him another match. They're obviously quite high on him at the moment.
Yeah, they're reheating him because Quang or Savio Vega, whichever, is a sturdy, reliable guy. Not the most exciting guy necessarily, but reliable, works hard, and you can put him with anyone and have an enjoyable enough TV match. Nothing wrong with that. And Ramblin' Rich, of course, has connections here because his father, I'm not sure if you remember this, Tom, is George the Animal Steel.
Ah, I did not know that.
Neither did I.
And George the Animal Steel is going to be in a movie that comes out the following week. Do you know the movie, Tom?
Oh! The movie with George the Animal Steel in from 94.
Yes. He has a supporting role. It's a black and white movie. And it's one of the most underrated comedies of all time.
Is it a Woody Allen one?
It has the word Wood in it.
Oh, it's bloody Ed Wood in it. He's in Ed
Wood. Yes, it is.
Oh, of course he is.
Yes, he plays Tor Johnson.
Oh, God. Oh, I'm excited. The story of Ed Wood. Like he was Tommy Wiseau before Tommy Wiseau was Tommy Wiseau.
Is that absolutely. What I'm thinking it is?
Yes, the one with Martin Landau playing Bela Lugosi.
Oh my god, that killed me.
All right, let's shoot this. I can't say the next word. But Martin Landau won Best Supporting Actor for playing Bela Lugosi.
And wow.
And he deserved every award he got, every accolade he got for playing that role, because he is hysterically funny.
Oh, what a guy.
Now, so you've seen it, right, Tom?
I've seen a bit of it. I've not seen all of it. That's a bit of a cop-out of an answer, but I have seen a bit of it.
You owe it to yourself to watch the whole thing. It is right up your alley,
trust me.
I really do. Just the whole scene with the giant octopus is both depressing and hilarious at the same time. When he realizes just how far his life has fallen. You know, I turned down Frankenstein. He has to go and fight the octopus. It's like, how do I turn it on? Well, someone misplaced the motor, so when you get in there and fight with him, shake his legs around so it appears you're killing him. And he realizes just how bad it's gotten for him. Just this poor old man hooked on heroin. It's depressing, and he goes off on a rant. And like, Bella, I've already seen the shoot tonight. Oh, sorry, I won't slow you down. He gets in and he does it as told. Ah, he's shaking his legs around. It looks so fake.
Oh, my God.
It looks so fake. And then Johnny Depp goes, and cut. That was perfect.
Beautiful.
Oh, God bless that movie. Now, speaking of bad acting, now, there's a segue.
Nice.
Remember when Matthew was telling us how you and him are kind of bidding farewell to Davey Boy Smith on the SmackDown reviews, which is a perfect time because now he's showing up back on the Raw reviews?
Absolutely. So this felt quite special.
What an entrance for Davey Boy Smith on the Raw reviews.
I feel like, and this would be a polarizing example. I feel like I've just... Actually, no, it won't, because I'm going to do a different one. I feel like I've just finished Frasier, and I'm now just discovering Cheers. That's the best way to describe this. Like, my favourite comedy...
I'm too young.
My favourite comedy's end. So basically, I'll tell you what, here's an example Sid will get. It's like, Sid, it's like I've just finished Big Bang Theory, and now I'm watching Young Sheldon.
Gotcha.
In the sense that we are seeing origins of people that we love to watch.
Okay, that makes sense.
The Bulldogs just finished his time on the timeline that myself and Matthew were exploring, SmackDown in 2000. And literally, just as he has been sent to rehab in 2000, here he is, pre-rehab, massive.
Oh, it's like it was timed.
Exactly. Looking like beef jerky in 1994.
It did look like beef jerky.
This was divine intervention in that sense, and by God, we need an intervention. So it's Davey Boy Smith on King's Court, and Lawler makes a million and one horrible dog jokes.
I think he makes more than that.
Oh, yes. So Bulldog comes out with pyro, and Vince, in a true Vince moment, goes, "The Rockets, red glare." He's from the UK.
Yeah, Vince. That made no sense. The Rockets' red glare.
He should have said, "God save our gracious."
He could have sang "London Calling" by the Jam.
How does Vince even know who the hell the Clash are?
Oh, the Clash even. Don't why I called it the Jam.
I doubt Vince even knew he was from the UK. He's like, "Oh, it's America, yay."
He's going to sing the song from Team America World Police, which you guys even know what that is either.
Here's the thing, right? This is what I'm pissed off from the beginning, because Jerry Lawler is true Jerry Lawler. This is like the return of the Bulldog. This is the British Bulldog's like proper return to the WWF. And as he's walking out to the ring, you've got Jerry Lawler in the ring going, here, boy, here. It's funny, objectively, but when you've got this guy returning, and you're just making him look like an arse. Could you imagine, like... I'll tell you what it's like, right? Imagine this happening with Steve Austin returning from injury in 2000 and having a middle-level manager just inviting him into the ring and just taking the piss out of him. And then Austin getting not stunnering him at the end. And the guy just leaving.
Yeah. That's a fair point. Or it could be like, can you imagine, like, let's say Christian came back to WWE at one point and he makes his entrance and the commentators are so wooden and underwhelmed that they just blow the whole thing. Can you imagine if that actually happened?
Oh, mate, that'd be terrible. If they just said something like, it's Christian. We haven't seen him in a bit. Like he's come back from the shops.
Here comes Christian. And at the tone, the time will be 5:14 p.m.
His moment just got instantly classic.
Fast forward 5 years when it actually does happen.
Well, that did happen.
Oh, it did happen?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I'll be over here.
No,
yeah.
Come back.
I'm sorry.
Come back.
I'm stupid.
You know, I'm glad that you didn't see it first time round because it made me really sad. So I'm actually very glad that you didn't know that happened.
Todd Grisham.
When was it?
2009, early 2009.
That's why. Because we didn't start watching wrestling until SummerSlam 2009.
Okay. To put it mildly, Todd Grisham makes Tom Phillips look like Mauro Ranallo.
Oh, boy.
Accurate.
I must look this up later.
He was basically a science class skeleton in the suit. So Lawler, he goes on and on with his jokes. Savage actually gets stopped by Vince at one point. And he says, I hope Bulldog raises a leg on Lawler. And Vince stops like, whoa, 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 because apparently you can't make pee jokes on the show because it's too risque. Can't do that.
Honestly.
So Davey just stands there and takes Lawler's brutal barbs, including a line, including a joke that ends with the phrase, use cur a lot, which got dead silence.
That was a crap joke, though. That's why.
And as if something terrible had happened and everyone just like standing there with mouths agape. So Lawler mentions Diana, which finally gets Bulldog to like, you know, kind of spring into action a little bit. And so we get Bulldog has to shout every sentence.
It's very kind that you call them sentences.
Bulldog is like a kid in a fourth grade play.
Right. He is. Oh God, that is incredibly accurate. That is incredibly accurate. Jesus Christ. I can't defend my countryman here. He's awful. He is awful.
Now, I do a semi not good impression of you, but if you'll allow me here, I have to recite what I wrote here in my best Bulldog voice possible.
The floor is yours.
Oh dear.
It's only five words, so if you'll indulge me. You're very funny, Jerry Lawler.
It's not a bad Mancunian accent, that.
With the naturalness and subtlety of a tectonic plate shifting.
So if Pangea broke apart in like one movement, just boom.
Jim, I wonder if anybody noticed. whole world's in Armageddon. It's like, gee, I wonder if. Anyway. So Bulldog uses the pooper scooper line. Oh my God. And all I can think of is, Oh, God, Vince has had this problem for years.
We really didn't know that? I'm pretty sure we know that by now.
It's funny because it's poop.
At that point, I pointed at the screen, making the same face that Donald Sutherland made at the end of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Just like, because I'm thinking, like, Moxley, he talked about this. It was Body Snatchers, right?
Yes, it was, yeah.
I just dropped my phone.
She was that shocked with the Body Snatchers reference. Sydney dropped her phone.
Yes. She made the same face as Sutherland.
Can I quote what Bulldog ends this ramble with?
Please.
Right, because the next week he's fighting Neidhart, we find out. Mm-hmm. And to quote, it's not going to be the worst decision of my career. It's going to be the best decision of my World Wrestling Federation career. Because I'm coming to the top next week on Monday Night Raw. What are you talking about?
English, do you speak it?
Mentalist.
It's like he's just
words fall out in any order. There's no panic.
They're spilling out of his mouth and he can't control it.
Oh, he's bizarre.
Do you know what it's like? You know how infamously, like, Owen Hart's promos were great, but it was because he built them around, like, two bullet points?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder whether Bulldog has the same process, but he just forgets the bullet points.
He remembers one, and then the other one, it's like, oh my god.
I'll keep talking till I remember it.
And that's why, in grade 7, I beat up the school bully, and then we made up, and we went to the arcade together, and, oh yeah, right, Shawn Michaels, you're an asshole.
I'm going to Raw.
So then I found my keys because I couldn't find them for an hour. I misplaced them. And it becomes tangential fun.
But what I love is that the power of the Bulldog, and the power of the Bulldog's promos in particular, the power around them is so strong that it pulls other people in. Like, the most infamous one is that kid who SummerSlam 92 says, the Bulldog's going to win whether he wants to or not. Like, Bulldog's bollocks. Like, it kind of travels through the air like pollen and just infects people.
Those two are kindred spirits.
They really are. And I feel like if you're around the Bulldog, you just start talking by shouting and in sentences with no real structure.
Now, getting to this point, I was excited when Bulldog came back because I'm like, okay, a damn good in-ring wrestler. So he can boost these shows by having enjoyable enough matches. And I remembered, oh, yeah, he's going to cut promos, too.
I forgot he has to talk.
Then when he's cutting the promo, just some people and, like, come in and put him in a white jacket and start dragging him off, and he's just continuing on with his tangent about his time in the grocery store.
Yeah, pretty much. So finally, Neidhart arrives. Mercifully, because someone's got to, of all people who are going to be the border collie for this segment and pull everything together and keep things organized, here comes the anvil. So Neidhart, he complains about Bulldog being at SummerSlam. He says, you're not one of the Hart kids. You shouldn't have been there. Now, at that point, Bulldog should have sprung in and pointed out, well, you're not one of the Hart kids either, because he would have had a point. So why were you there in Owen's corner at SummerSlam? But no, that point never gets brought up.
No, not at all.
Bulldog, like, he misses the exit so many times. So Neidhart challenges Bulldog for next week. Bulldog is, he enunciates something which I assume is an accepted challenge. He looks right at the camera and goes, I'm part of the new generation, while looking right into the lens, as if he's getting, like, a $100,000 bonus if he says that.
I think he must have.
Just to make sure he says it nice and clear. So then Bulldog's song kicks up. Hail Britannia, Royal Britannia, I believe it's called. Am I right?
Royal Britannia, yeah, you're fine.
Royal Britannia. And they keep talking. Neidhart keeps talking. Then Bulldog keeps talking. It's like, you know, Vince was begging for a commercial with his cough button on. like, cut him off. And that was that.
What a way to bring Bulldog back.
I know. It was Shockmaster-esque in its execution.
It was something
where you never forget the entrance. Next week, Vince plugs Alundra Blaze and Heidi Lee Morgan versus Bull Nakano and Luna Vachon. He gives it the necessary dignity, and Savage goes, a four-way cat fight! Rail, rail! Yeah.
Pretty standard. Four-way cat. Yes. I'm so glad that we're beyond that.
I was waiting for Savage to say, like, it's going to be a Jell-O wrestling match. Will Bull eat all the Jell-O first? Thank God he didn't go there. So this show is so bad at this point that we have to cleanse our palate with stuff from last week, i.e. Bob Backlund beating up Luigi and Frito, which I could watch over and over again. It's the best segment in probably months on this show. Probably since the Brett Kidd match. We find out that Lou had a slight shoulder separation, but he'll be okay. 1-2-3 Kid versus Kenny David.
Oh, Kenny David looks like, I can't find much about him, but he looks like he's probably a really good heel locally.
I wouldn't say that.
No?
probably not. I wrote, he looks like a roadie for Lynyrd Skynyrd.
I mean, he does look a little bit hirsute and a little bit floppy in the wrong places. And Vince does highlight that on commentary, which is fun.
Uh-huh. He comments on his poor physique and goes, he needs to work on his cardiovascular conditioning. Yeah, like Bulldog does with his beef jerky physique, as we've pointed out. Yeah, Vince is like, well, huh, I was found not guilty, so, you know, back to business. Where's Jim Powers? Let's bring him back. So Kid is having... Kid can work with anybody. Kid can hold any match together. He's struggling a bit here with Kenny David. Kenny David has all the coordination of, well, Bulldog cutting a promo. So it's during this match that Bob Backlund comes out with a present for Randy Savage. Gift wrapped and everything. Hands it to him and leaves. Kid's just chopping the hell out of Kenny David. Probably annoyed with him for being out of place or something. Vince actually reads the note that's on the package, because I guess Savage has a problem with live reads, so Vince is going to do it for him. It says, "Dear Randy, because of your comments last week, I have procured a dictionary so you can interpret my discourse for all the plebeians. Sincerely, Bob Backlund."
I love this. Backlund bringing out a dictionary. Was a great... Like, Backlund just bumps up this show just by appearing in this little segment.
If Bob Backlund's going to carry the show for the next at least 2 months... Kid misses a corner dropkick. Kenny David takes over with something that vaguely resembles offense. We have a corner charge in this match. You know, David sends Kid across, and he charges in, and David starts slowing down for some reason, as if he's waiting to be kicked in return. But it looks so threadbare and fake. Like, okay, Simpsons reference alert. Remember when Bart was Mr. Burns' heir, and Burns insisted that, you know, I can be your schoolyard chum, let's go outside and play. So they're playing football, and of course Burns is dressed as like a 1920s football player. He goes to kick the ball, and after like one step, he's out of breath. And he's like staggered up to the ball, kicks Smithers in the face. That was Kenny David's speed. So Savage is thumbing through the dictionary while Kid finishes with a flying leg drop. And we probably won't see Kenny David anymore on this show, I would imagine.
So I'm just, yeah, he just seems like, I feel like this is a one and done for him, but I don't know, I got this vibe about him that, like, he wrestled locally and he was, like, a very disliked heel, but this felt out of his depth.
Well, he probably was disliked by the people he had to work with. Because when Sean Waltman can't hold a match together with you in it, it ain't happening.
True. Very true.
Waltman's Mr. Trusty, the guy you can always rely on to get a watchable TV match out of, and this was rough.
Sorry, Kenny.
And then we come to this next bit, which I do not remember whatsoever.
I had no idea what was going on here, and I loved it.
The first line I wrote was, "Who the hell is this dude?"
I put, "Who is the dull guy in the glasses?"
So, we have, like, this event center set. We have this guy behind the desk who looks like basically Richard Belzer with a more 1994 hairstyle, speaking in kind of a monotone, talking about, was it seismic activity or monster activity or
monster
something?
Monster activity.
Monster. It'd be a good name for a TV show, Monster Activity. So then we hear these thudding footsteps. Boom. Boom. And all of a sudden, the guy looks up and he's horrified because there's giant ass King Kong Bundy standing next to him. He picks it. King Kong Bundy. Apparently we're on Kong Island, Skull Island, whatever the hell it was called. King Kong Bundy apparently ate this guy.
Won't lie.
He looked like he was very happy.
He looks delighted about it. Won't lie. This was hilarious.
What should have happened at the end of this bit was Bundy picked him up and made the face, and he goes, "Who the hell are you? You're not Sean Mooney."
Here's the thing, right? The thumbnail for this show is that Undertaker doing Cornette face. It should have been this.
Because, well, that would have got me to tune in to Bundy eating a guy.
Exactly. I'd have been there in a heartbeat.
I mean, I'm happy to see King Kong Bundy, but what the hell was this?
Oh, man. I also want King Kong Bundy to legit be that big when he debuts. I want him to wrestle and be that big.
All of his matches are just him stomping somebody a la the Monty Python foot.
Yeah. I've had a thought on this. And I can't... It's a bit like trying to unravel spaghetti. But...
Okay.
I think the point they were trying to make with this, with the... Like, it was obviously meant to be the old WWF. Because it was the old logo, mm-hmm. an old set, like an old-looking announcer talking dull. Because, obviously, anything before 1994 is crap. This is the new generation. It's brilliant. So when you find a reason to make people care about somebody from the old crap generation, and here's how you make them care, because they're so big and monstrous, they just destroy the old generation. And now they're coming for the new generation. I think that's what we were going for here.
We're like 1 week short of Vince beating up a cardboard cutout of Hogan with a baseball
bat.
That's
basically where we're going. That's where we're leading.
Here's
to.
What I think of you. Gets dragged off here. My stagehand runs back on. And keeps beating it up again.
But I think that's what it was. I think it was King Kong Bundy destroying a piece of the old WWF. In destroying this, in picking up this set and being a rawr with it. I think that was him destroying the old WWF, and now he's part of the new generation, so it's all right.
Sid, what do you think of King Kong Bundy?
I mean, that segment, I was just very confused. but I mean, it's cool. I'm guessing he was in, like, the... He was in the older generation, and now it's like, oh, he's coming to the new generation. Or is this like his first ever debut?
No, he was part of the old guard. He worked the first three WrestleManias. Rather famously,
okay.
too.
Fact, okay, so...
He headlined Mania 2 with Hogan inside a steel cage.
Gotcha. So he's basically just like returning, but now it's like, I'm in the new generation, so...
He also expedited the death of a midget wrestler named Little Beaver at Mania 3 by hitting him with
goodness.
An elbow drop. And apparently Beaver had health problems for years after that as a result and passed away not long after this segment aired, actually.
Wow.
Unfortunately. So, yeah, Bundy's back. The guy from the 80s in the new generation.
But the old was crap, so Bundy's destroyed it.
Yeah, we're gonna bring in the old guys like friggin' Blackjack Brawl with, you know, Mulligan hanging around and all those old guys from the old days, like Snuka, and like, no, we're the new generation. Here's King Kong Bundy and David Smith. So Action Zone is coming. Tom, are you excited? Not on the network, but are you excited?
Oh, heck yeah! Like, it's all about the action, less talk. This is directly done. To dig at the NFL for having a talk show on a Sunday night. So they're going, less talk, more action, basically.
What they should have done was put the spot right after Davey's promo.
Oh, I just want like an hour of Davey talking on the Action Zone. Just riffing. just riffing.
Just have him reading Robert Frost poems.
That'd be amazing.
Coffee shop Davey boy.
John?
So now we come... Yes, please. That one I want to see.
Davey boy. Thank you very much.
We now come to the real main event of the show. The legitimate main event. Because there are three stars in this match, and Bob Starr's not one of them. Shawn Michaels and Diesel, the tag team champions of the world, versus Bob Starr and future United States champion... Who better than Chris Kanyon?
Oh my god, this was amazing! Kanyon!
Chris Kanyon.
On WWF Raw!
aka Mortis.
Now, at this point, he was working as a physical therapist whilst sort of trying to get a full-on foothold into wrestling. He was doing bits of it, but this was probably the biggest match of his career so far.
Before that, he wrestled under a mask as Mortis, who was kind of like a Mortal Kombat-style character with a skull face, which is a really cool look. He had a ton of amazing offense, just a great wrestler in general, reliable guy. But unfortunately, he had some personal demons, and he unfortunately committed suicide in 2010, which kind of why he's a bit lost to history in some ways. But he always happy to see Kenny, because he's always someone that you can always trust in the ring. Entertaining
cool.
as hell. Although he was still finding his way here. He eventually joined a tag team in WCW called Men at Work with a partner named Mark Starr, not Bob Starr here, where they were just two construction workers. Thankfully, that was short-lived. But yes, this is the primordial version of Canyon in pro wrestling, and goddamn, Tom and I were happy to see him.
Great. It was one of those moments where I had the show on, and I hadn't really paid attention to the matches underneath. I just let it roll, and then it was just, all right, Chris Canyon. I was like, oh, is that... Oh, it's the Chris Canyon. Oh, okay. That's a nice surprise.
He looks way different here with us. With a singlet with like a lounge chair cushion design.
An underrated bit of Chris Canyon's career. We've talked about Mortis. We've talked about Innovator of Offense. Positively Canyon, where Chris Canyon started cosplaying as DDP.
And doing out random Canyon cutters backstage with people.
Yes.
Okay, then.
That was a thing.
No matter who they were. Other wrestlers, janitors, crippled children, didn't matter. So it's during this match that we learned that Samu has left the company. That's a little abrupt, but we have an explanation for why he left coming up a little bit later on. And so Canyon's getting beat up by Diesel in the corner, and he's selling like a champ, just off of every barrage trick, every elbow, every knee to the gut. Canyon was just, how did Vince not sign him? He's like 6'3", 260 pounds. He looks good. His stuff looks good. Why not? You need it, guys. How did he fall through the cracks?
Yeah, he seems like a bit of a loss. I don't know whether... I looked up and there was nothing backstage that suggested... Or there was nothing that suggested that he'd upset people backstage. It might have just been a case of like the night Vince wasn't paying attention. So he went out and did his thing and it just wasn't caught by anybody.
Who could have had Mortis in the WWF?
That'd be amazing.
Or it could have sucked.
It would have been great. No! It would have been great!
Well, he would have been good, but how would they have booked him?
Him versus Max Moon.
Could have happened.
John, WrestleMania X7, Mortis versus Max Moon.
That's a lot of ribbed outfits. for somebody's pleasure. Whose pleasure? Not ours. Meanwhile, Bob Starr looks nothing like Chris Canyon. In fact, he resembles Papa Stunt.
Meanwhile, Bob Starr is there.
Yes. Vince says Starr is anything but that. Boy, is Vince salty this week.
He's being so harsh to all these guys, just trying to make a living.
He hit the cough button or mute button or whatever and sent a message, who the hell found these jobbers? Besides this Canyon fellow.
If only there was like a previous commentator who we could bring in as a head of who could relate to talent, that'd be really handy right about now.
Why can't Italian find some other guys who are aerodynamic high flyers and then charge them road fare and leave them in the middle of nowhere?
Just
but anyway,
to them.
So Sean comes in, and Sean, thank God Sean's here, because Sean can make any show semi-entertaining by being himself. Vince talks about the women's match next week and says, there are four of the best women in WWF today. They're the only four, Vince. Starr gets beaten up for a while, as he should. Diesel jackknifes him. Then Diesel tags Sean. Sean starts running off the ropes. He's going to hit some big move off one side, off the other side. Starr's not moving. What's Sean going to do? Then Sean just stops and covers him and wins. Okay. All right, that was funny.
A proper troll finish. I loved it.
Proper heel finish. Pretty funny.
Sean hadn't found God yet, but God bless Sean here. So had it just ended there, that'd have been fine. But no, we got some extracurriculars to get into. Because as Diesel and Sean are celebrating, two men hit the ring. One of whom is Head Shrinker Fatu. And the other is not Samu. No. This is Head Shrinker Sione.
What?
A.K.A. The Barbarian. All of a sudden, we have a new Head Shrinker, and Savage has to shoehorn the phrase, "That's the cousin, right?" Because something he was instructed to say, probably, to make sure we knew the connection to the family. So they start beating the crap out of Sean and Diesel. And also we have the new Head Shrinkers. We go to break, we come back. They have Captain Lou and Afa with them for an interview at ringside. And Captain Lou, well, first off, he gets the name wrong. He calls him Simone. He's standing right there. His name's Sione.
It's fine. We're going to get the greatest backstory, whatever his name, in mere moments.
Yes, because we find out why Samu is not here. Captain Lou informs us that Samu ate some raw fish and got sick. Now, Tom, far be it from me to criticize a way of writing somebody out, but would they have said he ate raw fish about anyone else on the roster? Like, if Jeff Jarrett stopped showing up, would they have said Jarrett ate raw fish? No, they wouldn't.
That's the bit that baffles me. Like, he's the story here, and I've got some notes on this here. He's actually gone. Like, he's properly gone. Samu, yep. And Timothy Well both no-showed in L.A. and Boston. No explanation.
What, did he eat raw fish too?
Well, apparently, Stephen Dunn is about to come out and tell you and go, Timothy Well, he ate some raw fish, Billy.
So
they're gone. They're like, Vince has said, all right, don't come back, dickheads. See you later. Vince said exactly that. Don't come back, dickheads. So it seems rare for them to explain away where Samu is, because they could have got away with just going with Lou Albano just going, here's Fatu. This is Simo. This is Simon. Simon. Billy. This is Sione. Billy. They could have done that, and it would have been fine. I would have looked up and gone. But then they did the. He spent more time. Did Albano explaining why Samu wasn't there? Just this wonderful claptrap about he's eating some bad fish. He's had to go to a special doctor in Samoa that only they can cure him, and maybe if he gets better, they might bring him back. It was just
well, that sounds optimistic.
It really does. Like, it gives you the impression that Samu's coming back at some point, but I wouldn't count on it.
Yeah, but.
Give him a few weeks, he'll be right back in the ring.
But I mean, they said, well, if he comes better, if he's cured, he'll come back. Like, if. Not when, but if. Usually, like a celebrity gets cancer or something, they're like, I'm going to come back stronger. I'm going to beat this. Live strong. Fight strong. All that. Like, if Samu can beat this raw fish salmonella disease, then maybe he'll come back. It's like, that's a little vague.
Very, very vague. Utter nonsense. I love it.
All the little Sam Maniacs out there are not feeling too thrilled at the moment.
Sam Maniacs.
And Lou gave him some, like, six-syllable illness name that I didn't even bother writing down because I feel like rewinding, like, hepatepacapalepa, something you just make up, like, you pull out of your ass. It's just like, you're really going kind of far to explain why this guy's not here.
You are really, really taking a lot of time to tell us that you're not. You said more time talking about our new friend here. There should be more time spent talking about Simon, It does explain some of the rumors doing the rounds earlier in the month regarding the return to the WWF of the Barbarian. It was Meltzer picked up on some hot rumours that the Barbarian was coming back in. And admittedly, as I've said a few times on this podcast, this wasn't an era that I watched the WWF. I was tuned out as a wrestling fan at this point. So for me, I'm discovering a lot of this first time round. So I remember reading that thing about the Barbarian and going, oh, that's funny. The Bundy, Barbarian, bring all the old boys back. Anyway, Barbarian doesn't come back. And then when the Headshrinkers hit the ring, I go, of course he came back. There he is. There's the Barbarian.
Except he's
and
not.
He's Simon.
Yes, he's Simone Biles.
New Headshrinkers, baby. So
this is going on, and Diesel's trying to hit the ring, and Sean's trying to hold him back, which is hilarious.
And Sean's hanging off him completely throughout this whole bit. It's brilliant.
It's like Diesel trying to pull off a wet coat. Sean's getting thrown to and fro, and Diesel's is madder than a wet hen, as they say. And that's how the show goes off the air. Vince plugs Neidhart and Davey Boy, and that is it for this show. And actually, we do have a little bit of a ditty to get to, do we not?
We do indeed. He is back once again with the ill behavior. In fact, I think Sydney, our special guest, should do the honors of introducing our musical accompaniment today.
Well, she might know him.
Might have heard of him.
So, in a memoriam for our great Samu and his poor foodborne illness of eating fish, we have Mr. Stromerwitz with his memoriam to Samu. Enjoy.
When Captain Lou broke the news, it cut us like a hook. That Samu died on yellowfin that wasn't even cooked. Our hearts don't bleed for Samu, we'll never be the same. Captain so broken up he couldn't learn Sione's name. Let this be a lesson to us all, every grown up and child. You can't just eat whatever you find out among the wild. Cooking kills bacteria and keeps us living clean.
You don't say.
It's 94 and we can't afford to lose another team.
Not another team.
Yes, we got lucky. Sione was on speed dial. But what if Tom Pritchard starts puking up bile? Who else could fill in to team with Gigolo? We can't put a halo on someone like Bigelow. And what's one smoking gun without the other?
I guess they'll do fine. They're not even brothers.
They're not even brothers. But still, duos are rare, coming at a premium. So cook your damn fish if you keep on eating them. We don't need the click contracting foodborne illness, though it's preferable to Pettingill's shrillness. So when it comes to fish and meat, avoid consuming raw, cause consuming raw was Tom and Justin's downfall.
Well, we can't lose in tag teams at this point because we have none left. We'll just keep going to the old guard. Pretty soon it's going to be, you know, it's going to be like Bob Holly and Chief J. Strongbow winning the tag belts.
The Native Americans.
But spoiler, well, they are both from America,
exactly.
Technically. But spoiler alert, Samu is okay and is doing well in real life. He's one tough individual.
Exactly. He's just not on Raw anymore.
Thankfully, he's fine. It's probably for the best at this point.
So, that was Raw for this week. And thank you to Stromerwitz for the song all about this week's Raw. Sydney, did you enjoy Raw this week?
I enjoyed being on it, on this episode. But
Just say no if you didn't like it, it's fine.
I didn't like the beginning. The ending got better.
It got better as it went along.
Yeah.
Thanks to Bob Starr.
Yes.
Yeah, that's
fine. And Captain Lou.
That's fine. You don't have to like
Billy.
You don't have to like it, Billy, Billy, Billy. It's absolutely fine. Until next time we are together. Incidentally, before we do go, Justin Henry is taking a little vacation on Tuesday, aren't you, Just?
I am.
Because you are traveling.
That's right. I am.
Year 2000.
I am. Oh yes, because WWE has instituted the brand to brand invitation here in 2020, which is not at all like a wild card rule.
No.
I am going to be invited. I'm inviting myself to the SmackDown Classic Review, where I will be helping Mr. Campbell here and Mr. Matthew Gregg as we do a live watch-along of No Way Out 2000.
The Hell in a Cell for Mick Foley's career will be discussed at length and laughed at loud by myself, Justin Henry, and Matthew Gregg. You'll be able to hear that on Tuesday on the Cultaholic podcast feed. Until then, I'll see you in the future, Justin.
See you in the future,
and I'll
Tommy.
See you in the present. Sydney, give us to plug and tell us where people can find you.
You can find me on Twitter at SAZoomer4. You can find me on Instagram at the same thing. I don't really post much. You can find me on the Discord. I'm just Sydney S on Cultaholic Discord. The little nice little yellow name. But yeah, that's about it.
Beautiful. With a nice little yellow name.
Yeah, my name's yellow. Like, all of our names are yellow.
Oh, because you... Yes, I get it now. Because
you're special.
You're the special.
Well, you guys are special, too.
Well, we know that. We've been told that for years.
Nah, my mom made a point to tell me I'm not special. He is at Justin Henry, JRH writing on Twitter. She is at SAZoomer on Twitter, SAZoomer4 on Twitter. I am at Tom Campbell on Twitter. Together, we are at Cultaholic on Twitter. Don't forget to join us. Billy, 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 Billy. Love you, bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.